There's a very famous Zen story about the head of a monastery, a great Zen teacher, who was revered by all of his students and people all around. And one day, the governor of the territory came to speak at his monastery, essentially to honor this man and to praise him. And when the head of the monastery reached out a little nervously to shake the hand of the governor, he realized his hand, that the monk's hand was warm and wet, and that he was nervous. And after the governor left, the monk realized that none of his attainment meant anything, because he still had a sweaty palm when he met the governor. And he gave up being the head of the monastery and went back into seclusion for 30 more years, because he knew he was yet to achieve what he had been looking for, which was a state of true egolessness. Had the governor not arrived, he might not have known his little hidden area of egoism. I tell you that as a prelude to my past week, which was an immersion in total egoistic striving. And I tell this to you humbly, not as an announcement that I'm leaving teaching, which I probably should do anyway, but just to tell you why it's so adventurous and difficult and endlessly involving this drama of rising above ego. I spent the first part of this week at the Sundance Film Festival, which is a festival of ego, of striving beyond all understanding for recognition, acceptance, honor, acknowledgement, creative justification. And I was there with a film that already had distribution, that already was set up, a movie that was not in the competition at all. It was just there as part of an event honoring the man who directed it, who is a friend of mine, and a film that I had written. I was amazed to watch the insanity of ego-driven striving played out on such a big canvas. I didn't fully understand it. The thing that seemed to be the dominant driving force of the people I was with, and they were not the struggling strivers trying to establish themselves in the film world. These were people who were established movie stars, owners of large corporations, and they were giving away what's called swag. Swag is, I don't know what it is exactly. It's silk scarves and boots and electronics and things like this that they give to famous people. And I don't know why they give it to them, other than to have some identity of the product with these famous people. And the people I was with became whores for swag. They could not get enough of it. That's all they talked about, literally. That's all they talked about. They wanted to get more swag. They wanted to get on the list. They wanted to go to these suites. I don't know where the suites were. I suddenly was very desirous of swag, I have to say. I didn't even know what I would get, but I wanted to be on the list, but I was not on the list. And if you want to have ego demonstrating its full power, be kicked off or not allowed on the list for swag. You really get a sense of where you fit in the larger scheme of things. And these people went out on forays. These are people who can afford to buy the very companies that the swag was coming from. And they could not wait to get their hands on God knows what little cameras and sweatshirts. And my mind and my ego went into total overdrive. And I was, in a sense, feeling nothing but shame based on all of my years of spiritual practice. And here I was craving, fearing that I wasn't making the list, wanting recognition, all of this stuff that goes along with the chosen area in which you decide you will establish your recognition, you will establish your identity. We all have that somewhere. It could be in your family, it could be in school, it could be anywhere in the world. There is a place in which your ego suddenly feels it's got a shot at becoming more empowered, larger. And that was my arena. And film has always been that arena for me. And it was a really painful experience. It was really nothing but pain most of the time, and then it translated into something other. We showed the film that I was there to help present, and the response to the film was really wonderful. People were crying, applauding. Some man stood up at the question and answer moment and said, "Do you realize you've made one of the best science fiction films of all time?" And my ego went from being totally deflated, totally off the list, to suddenly being bigger than anything you guys have ever imagined. So I had just taken this unbelievable rocket trip into greatness. And I enjoyed the rest of the trip. I walked around feeling, hey, I am this person. I am the writer, one of the writers of one of the greatest science fiction films of all time. Until I picked up Variety the next day, which called it one of the worst films of not the decade, but it certainly didn't honor it on any level. And my ego collapsed so fast I could barely walk. I could barely function. And I kept watching this drama go on. The lucky thing, and there is a lucky element here, is that I was conscious of what was happening. To go through this ride unconsciously is truly unbearable. But for me, it was extraordinarily instructive. So here I am with this deflated ego sitting on a private jet flying back from Sundance to LA. You have to understand, on private jets there are seating patterns. And I was seated toward the back of the plane, in the best seat in the back of the plane, but not in the front of the plane. And I was very conscious of that, as was everybody, where they were sitting. And opposite me was the head of distribution, who weighed about 350 pounds, and there was just enough room, our feet faced each other, so we had to keep moving our feet so we could occupy the same space. And as we're flying, we are suddenly made aware of the fact that the windshield on the front of the plane, in front of the pilot, was cracking. And the plane had to descend very quickly, and there was an incredible awareness that we may not make it back to the airport. And I went, So I started continuing reading my Time magazine, going, and all I could think in the back of my mind was, this is the weirdest group of people to die with. Who would have ever imagined? And then I kept staring at this 350-pound man in front of me and realized I was going to be merging with this person. And it was very distasteful. But I was surprised at how calm I was. I went, And that was a revelation for me. Because in spite of all of my egoism, there was something inside that was at peace. And that was open to what is. The plane landed, and we were fine. I came home and got dressed, took a shower, and taught class on Rudy's birthday. I was totally exhausted. And yet, sitting here in this spot, the class arrived because it had nothing to do with Bruce and everything to do with Rudy and everything to do with the people sitting here. People come for an energy that is not of my ego. It's an energy that simply is present and available. And it announces itself independently of anything I am or who I am, whatever weakness I feel, whatever depletion, whatever exaggeration, it doesn't matter. The energy just arises. And it expresses itself independently of me. When the class was over, I sat down. You want some water? Sorry. When the class was over, I went to bed. I woke up the next morning. I sat down to meditate. And I felt what an amazing experience this last few days had been. Part of me felt the shame that I had experienced there of being so far away from my detachment, so far away from my spiritual core. And then another part of me said, look at this journey. Look at this journey. This is the journey. This is the human experience. In the midst of all of this ego striving, there is an observer. There is this core quality that is present no matter what is going on in your life. And I felt so grateful to be aware of that. And suddenly, my identity shifted from the ego habit, which is really what it is, into this place of relaxation and embrace. And I just sat there and I said, this is my true home, and that I was deeply grateful for the ability to step out of the ego and into this place. And I walked around feeling this gratitude. And then I lost my glasses and my computer crashed with all of my work on it. And I realized how tentative our embrace of spirit is, or of surrender is, in the face of quote unquote calamity. And I responded to the calamity with a lot of excitement and unpleasantness. I was not in a joyful state. And my son looked at me, my son who regards me both as father and occasionally as teacher, and saw all of the cracks in the armor, as did I. And then I just said, well, you have to act upon what's happening. So I took my computer to the computer shop. I had backed up almost everything, luckily, so I didn't really lose anything significant. And I came home from the computer store and I sat down and wrote 30 pages of a script, which is, I've never done that. And I took all of his energy and I just worked and worked and worked and finished this movie. I've never done this in my life in 12 days. And came to teach this class today. As I'm sitting in the class teaching you, there is a level of joy and a level of awareness that is remarkable because it understands so deeply the struggle and the scrim of ego through which most of us view our existence. And it makes me so humble and real and appreciative of what everybody in the human race goes through. Whatever our story, whatever our drama, whatever our day-to-day experience, it's going to be full of great joy and great drama, and it is going to go on and it is going to fall away. It is going to go on and it is going to fall away. The only difference is if you have a life in which spirit or stillness or being in the present means something, when the drama is over and you can recollect yourself, there is a place to go. And that place is profound and it is deep and it is secure and it is real. And it is the very core and essence of who you are. Drama will return. Ego will return. All of this will go on because I'm a human being on the planet. But having a refuge in my life is, for me, the distinguishing factor of a spiritual practice. It does not save me from the adventure of daily experience. It does not absolve me from suffering. It does not keep computers from crashing or airplanes from crashing, necessarily. It doesn't stop you from inflating into thinking you're the greatest thing that ever happened. All it does is it moderates, when you become quiet, all of that activity and brings it into a still point of surrender. And that still point of surrender, when you touch it, is a point that just settles down, 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 down. And then it spreads out and out and out, and it is so big and so wondrous and so simple, and there is no you there. There is only what is. The ego part of you is so absorbed by, dissolved by, usurped by this remarkable largeness of being. And that being is nothing but presence. And by that I mean the present. The present is so imbued by all that is. Unlike past and future, which is all mind stuff, it's all thought, it's all memory, it's all projection, it's all anticipation. It has nothing but concept. The present is real. And you know it's real because it feels profoundly solid. It is this very moment. And this very moment is connected to the vastness of the truth of being. The mystery of being. There is no explanation for it. There is no way to grab what it is. It is so big, embracing it is impossible. You are in its embrace. You are in the embrace of the real, the truth, the moment. That is what you are. And this ego, this little flittering thing that comes up and starts to look at the real through its own particular little scrim of memory and experience and day-to-day life, creates a very specific little image of this vast thing. And that little image is very powerful to us, but it's also nothing. It's so ephemeral. And at one point you go, you blow, and the candle goes out. But the candle's still there. The light's gone, but you're there. It exists. You are still present. And that presence is there in the middle of ego, with ego and without ego, with big ego and with diminished ego. This presence is just there watching this absurd, wonderful, funny, tragic drama of your life. And not only that, it is loving your life. It is loving your drama. It is loving your pain and loving your joy and loving your suffering and loving your exaltation, because it participates in that. It lives for that. It lives for our lives. It is because it loves us. It loves the ride we're taking. And when it is all over and it comes to an end, and everyone fears that end so greatly, but when it comes to an end, there's no end. There's no end. You come to the end, and the very thing that was watching your life is watching your life end. It watches your life dissolve. And as much as you think, oh my God, how can I let go of this great, great life that I've just had? You discover that you are all the lives that have ever been had. You are life itself. You are the very core, the very essence, the very substance of existence. And your one little life, yes, you're attached to it. Yes, you love it. Yes, you cry over the problems. Yes, you exult in the happiness of it. But it's one little drop in billions of lives that you have had and that you are. And when you start to let go of the habit of identification with this life, you start to weaken that. You start to begin to taste, in the middle of this human experience, you begin to taste this vastness, this simple, joyful, conscious reality. How is it, I ask myself half of the time during the day, that I get to know this? How is it that I get to touch this? Why is it that I get to wake up in the morning and take a breath and go, oh my God, look at this. This is new for me. It's only in the last few years, really, where that has really started to happen, where the habit of falling into ego all the time has weakened, and the habit of falling into myself has begun to emerge. Instead of falling into the stuff of dreams, I fall into the stuff of truth. And it's what we're all doing. We're all learning. We're all learning to do that. Everyone sitting in this room is learning to shift the equation from falling into the dream, falling into the hope of being the greatest being ever on the planet, or the worst. Letting go of all that and just sitting down in this meditative space here or on your own and just letting go. And what happens is the weight of letting go starts to pull you in, pull you in, pull you in, until you go through, if you will, the portal of ego into the truth of conscious being. It's the great human ride. It's what we're all here to find. It's what life is about. Not to find it is the tragedy of human experience. To go through all of this drama, the up, the down, the in, the out, and not to know that it has purpose, that it has depth, that it has content, that it has value. That's the sadness of most human lives. People's lives come to an end and they weren't even lived. They were just the great soap opera drama that has no content. This life that we have, this moment that we're in right now, is pregnant with being. Give birth to that. Give birth to that in yourself. Find it in yourself. Open to it. Embrace it. And know that this habit, even just of coming to class, even of just sitting every morning, has great value. Great, great value. And not to do it is to lose something tremendous. I watch how people come to class. I watch the pattern. You know, we had Rudy's birthday party on Tuesday or Wednesday night. And many of the people who came did not come today. And I can tell that there's this once a week idea. I'll go to class once a week. So if I went Wednesday night, I don't have to come Sunday. I get that. I get that balance. I get that idea that people have in their brain. But I'm telling you, in spiritual work, if you feel like going once a week, find something in yourself that will push you into twice a week. And I'm telling you that not because I want you to come to class, but because the very effort of expanding and pushing yourself into taking more, into being more available to the abundance of life, the idea of actually reaching for more than being satisfied with the comfortable or the simple or the lesser. Reaching for more is a muscle. Rudy talked about it all the time. That's how you grow. To reach for more makes more room possible. It makes it possible for the patterns to alter, for you to change. The pattern that says once a week is enough is a deathly pattern. It's not enough. As soon as you think it's enough, you're in trouble. It's the constant reaching beyond, reaching for more, that changes everything in your life. And once you find the place that is static, you are in the death throes of your existence. Stasis is not human life. Growth, movement, the journey is human life. Give yourself the journey, even if it doesn't go the way you wanted it to. Even if coming to class the second time sits you in traffic for 2 hours and you go, what the hell am I doing here? That's exactly what it's about. Moving through traffic, moving through the resistance, moving through the density of human life is exactly what gives you life. Ego is the struggle. Ego is the thing that you're working with and against, for and above and below. It's the very essence of the drama of human life. When you become the monk in the monastery whose hand is sweating, you are at a very fine point of human development. But even he had to recognize that the sweaty palm was the sign of the last vestige of ego. I can't tell you when we will arrive at the last vestige of ego. I'm not even sure it matters. All that matters is that you watch the dance, you appreciate the dance, that you recognize that even ego is God at work. It's all part of the whole. Embrace the whole and surrender. That is the journey we're on, and I tell you this with great love. Love the journey. Any questions? Okay, thank you. A few brief comments. On Saturday, this is one of those pushing the envelope here. And believe me, I don't like getting up on Saturday morning to do a class. I'm not doing it for me. I mean, a little bit, because I'm putting on DVDs of other teachers that I can learn from. So this Saturday I'm showing someone who I don't know, Byron Katie. But I believe from what people have told me, Eric has visited with her and got the DVDs, bought them at her seminar. The little bit I've seen of her on YouTube, she's worth exposing yourself to. You know, I put out Eckhart for people for weeks, and I think some people benefited enormously from that. So Saturday, 9 o'clock, promptly, we will see Byron Katie, and I will keep these going. And Tuesday night class here, Wednesday with Wendy, Thursday with Terry and Brian. If you feel like putting yourself out, these are availabilities now that did not exist before. And then next Sunday, here. I think we need people to sign up next week for fruit and coffee cake. If anybody wants to do that, that would be appreciated. That's it. Thank you all very much.